Mr. Stephen Mayne is a shareholder activist. He's an online columnist. Many years ago, he founded crikey.com.au and then he sold it for a cracker for $1 million, and he's probably regretted it ever since. Stephen Mayne, good morning.
Hello, Virginia. Look, a million doesn't go very far these days.
No,
I can tell you that.
Not.
Still working very hard, unfortunately.
What could you sell it for today? What do you reckon you get for it today?
Oh, well, I think the current owners would get between 5 and 10 mil, but that's been mainly because of their skill in the last 2.5 years. So, I'm still happy with my mil, you know, generated from the spare bedroom. Now it's got a city office and 15 staff. You know, it's been professionalised. It's gone from amateur crikey with me to professional pro crikey now.
That's right, yes. Well, we're all professional now. In fact, even the Yemma government is going pro. It's about to do what virtually every other state in the country has done. Is that a correct statement?
Queensland. Mm. Queensland hasn't done the...
Oh, I think I mentioned Queensland before, so that's my error. I thought Queensland had sold off...
Well, look, Queensland just raised $4 billion from selling off their retail arms.
That's right.
Which is the ability to manage the customers. And do all the marketing around the energy sales. And I think that was a great price that they got, the $4 billion, and I think that got the Yemma government looking north of the border quite jealously and saying, well, if the comrades up there, who've done less privatisation than any government in the country, can get $4 billion without a backlash, then so can we. But oh, by jingo, we have such a need for new power stations here in New South Wales and such an inability to fund them. We better flog off the power stations as well. So that's where you get combined $15 billion figure. And I have to say, it is a fascinating story, just with all the interrelationships between barley and climate change and
yes.
New South Wales's need for new baseload.
And Al Gore.
Al Gore, it has to be coal. Then you've got the new federal agenda. And New South Wales basically stepping outside previously agreed national guidelines for energy price setting as part of this deal. So we've got this new regulator federally, the Australian Energy Retailing Authority, I think it is. And we'd all agreed that 2009 we'd have deregulation of prices, but no, Yemma's come along and said we're going to extend that to 2013, fix prices until then. So we've got this sort of federalism agenda. Climate change, infrastructure crisis in New South Wales, plus New South Wales being already the highest taxing state in the country, on a debt binge, borrowing $3 to $4 billion a year on their current trajectory to catch up on infrastructure, and even the Labor Party and even the unions all throwing their arms up and saying, okay, 10 years on from when we should have done it, we'll now flog it off in all these sort of politically acceptable ways with the job guarantees and price guarantees, and we'll only sell bits and we'll only lease it, we won't sell it, all these contortions which will all serve to lower the price that taxpayers will get for their assets, which for frankly I have to say is all a bit sad from a public policy point of view in terms of the way the whole thing's unfolded.
Well, look, it is interesting, and you've just run through so many subjects there that we probably can't do justice to in the next few minutes, but as someone who has watched these privatisations very closely in other states, in Victoria in particular, and has seen what's flowed on from it, and the fact that clearly overseas companies paid too much for those assets, and then there was a consolidation of how many companies started out originally into much fewer. What do you see is going to unfold here in New South Wales if it goes ahead as it's been roughly sketched out?
Well, I guess a couple of points there. Victoria did break up their electricity and gas sectors into almost 20 different companies. So they had vastly integrated monopolies, a bit like the old Telstra and a bit like the old Pacific Power in New South Wales. And they broke them up. They did a lot of cutting of jobs. So they cut the workforce from 24,000 to 6,000, much of which was achieved before they sold off the assets. And they created a genuine competitive model, which was the first in the world. Where it was a market operating, and then they sold them for amazing prices and basically totally transformed Victoria's balance sheet. New South Wales, by way of a stark contrast, only did a minor breakup. So they sort of kept Energy Australia as covering all of Sydney, and they only created a couple of different generating companies. And since they've been over the last 10 or 12 years in government ownership in a competitive environment, New South Wales taxpayers have lost billions on things like hedging blunders and misreading the way the new market operates and New South Wales hasn't gone anywhere near the same levels of efficiencies as has occurred in Victoria. And of course, then there's the vast need for capital investment. So it's a big process now. I think they'll start with the easy bit, which will be selling off the retailers, like occurred in Queensland. And then I think you'll get to the really difficult bit, which will be pricing the generators. When you need new coal, when you've got a price carbon, when you've got 20% mandatory renewable targets. So, you know, the existing generators in New South Wales will have to sit there and say, well, we can only be 80% of the market here because the new Rudd government is saying mandatory 20% renewable by 2020. So the whole economic rationale of a new coal-fired power station for New South Wales will have to be worked out within the prism of those new rules and any target that is set for 2020. So it's I think that, you know, frankly, the prices of those generating assets will be quite tricky and will be possibly a disappointment for the taxpayer in terms of getting a massive, you know, tens of billions infusion into the balance sheet.
So do you think $15 billion is overstating it?
Well, it's hard to say because the figure sort of confuses also the amount of spend that the private sector will have to do on new power stations. I mean, there's figures being bandied around of, you know, $8 to $10 billion on new power station assets which the private sector will have to do, which they will then have to get a return on. So I think one thing you can say for sure is that prices are going to go up for electricity in Australia, and that's mainly the whole climate change equation. Yet if simultaneously you've got the Yemen government announcing a price freeze or regulatory caps on pricing for consumers until 2013, and people are going to have to factor in carbon, then literally the value of your coal-fired power stations much diminished. And, you know, in some scenarios you're talking about stranded assets here where, you know, it's not going to be nearly worth the replacement value of building new plants. So it's going to be an incredible tightrope walking exercise spanning environmental, economic, budgetary and political issues. And, I worry a little bit about the way New South Wales has previously handled privatisations with this mentality. I mean, The Fay government literally got $250 million from the sale of the State Bank of New South Wales back in 1996. That was the net price. Because they banned certain people from buying it and they said a big bank couldn't buy it, they guaranteed jobs, they did all these sort of politically sensitive things.
Yeah, which is just to jump in there, Stephen, which is exactly what many taxpayers and residents here in Sydney, New South Wales, would want to see. They do want to see that sort of stuff carefully protected and cut up before it's just sold holus bolus.
But 6 years later, the State Bank was sold to the Commonwealth Bank at a valuation of $2 billion.
Yeah.
So the private owners of Colonial Mutual, who bought the thing for a song in the greatest bank heist in history, $250 million for the State Bank of New South Wales, yes, made a windfall a couple of billion dollars. So I always find it amazing how you know, anyone else who was selling an asset, if you were selling your house, you'd say, well, I want to get the best price I can because I own it. But in the case of sort of sensitive utility assets, governments across the country, probably with the exception of Jeff Kennett, but across the country say, oh, well, let's do a politically expedient public float because this will be more acceptable. I mean, I was working for the Kennett government back then, and every time the stockbroker said, you'll get 30% more from a trade sale. Sell it to the highest trade sale, you get 30% more. That was literally like $5 or $6 billion, which then went back into, you know, schools, hospitals, and the things that state governments are actually meant to do rather than running big capital-intensive industries like electricity
generators. All right, so would that be your argument of comfort today to all the dozens and dozens of listeners who have rung this program this morning, Stephen Mayne, and said, I don't like the idea of this utility being in private hands. I don't philosophically support the idea of this being flogged off. It's ours. We should keep it. You're saying the best way for you to get some value out of what's yours is to get the highest price for it.
Well, if you're going to complain about all the other infrastructure problems in New South Wales, then I think that is the answer. I mean, I would simply argue that there is a higher priority for the state's capital. I mean, they're already doing private deals for schools and hospitals and trains and roads. I mean, the New South Wales government has done more PPPs and privatised deals than any other government in the country, and they've managed to botch up most of them. I mean, the whole toll roads encircling Sydney, with the exception of the Cross City Tunnel, have been an absolute bonanza for the private owners of the toll road, who have literally made, you know, between $5 and $7 billion in capital profits because Sydney motorists are forced to pay literally now, you know, 100 to 200 million a year more in tolls than they should if successive governments had more competently negotiated better long-term toll agreements on those things. So it's just a shocking history of bad negotiation, opportunistic dealings, et cetera, et cetera. And I just hope that, you know, finally, when we get a sort of a desperate energy privatisation to avoid spending $10 billion on new power stations, that they actually try and maximise the price for taxpayers so they can actually utilise the capital in other areas and not go off and do more bad PPP deals on toll roads and hospitals and schools and everything else, which they've been doing in the past.
All right, well, let's see what the listeners make of that argument. It's cogently made. Stephen Mayne is with you, shareholder, activist and founder of crikey.com.au at 5 minutes to 10 on 702 ABC Sydney. You've had a look at the Kevin Rudd ministerial code and applied that to other political moments in the recent past, and to see how it might stack up, Stephen.
Well, I love the code. I think Kevin Rudd deserves huge plaudits for taking this step, and it does put a lot of pressure on other state governments across the country to follow suit. But if you have a look at John Howard's roll call of his ministers, I think if you actually go through the stats, it's pretty amazing. I mean, now, in the future, ministers are banned for 18 months from cashing in on their portfolio after they leave Parliament. And, you know, who can forget? Larry Anthony, the children's minister who joined the board of ABC Learning 6 months after losing his seat. John Fay claimed to have privatised more than anyone else in the Western world, was on the advising JP Morgan 4 months after ceasing being the finance minister. Peter Reith, 24 hours after resigning as defence minister, was working for Tenex, Australia's biggest defence contractor. Richard Alston, 6 months out of parliament, was lobbying for Austereo on digital policy, totally related to his communications work. And Michael Wooldridge, the worst of the lot, was health minister who donated $5 million to the GP lobby group 7 days before the 2001 election, and then they promptly hired him to be a consultant, partly using some of that money straight after the election. I mean, that was just, if you look at that, it really is, I think, quite a distressing roll call of greedy opportunism to cash in on one's ministerial knowledge. And I think full marks to Kevin Rudd for actually laying down the law on this and saying you can't do it. If you undertake to be a minister of mine, you must sign something which says you won't do this. And Bob Carr couldn't have rushed off to Macquarie Bank, which has made, you know, those billions I was talking about on toll roads around Sydney. No one's made a bigger slice of those billions than Macquarie Bank. And for mine, just a really bad look for Bob Carr popped down there on $500,000 a year, as it was reported so quickly. So, look, well done to Kevin Rudd on that. And you know, hopefully we'll see others follow suit.
There's a co-ed coming up on the 20th of December, which has outraged everyone working in the press gallery. They're going to be working up to the death knot before Christmas. And a historic meeting of a Labor federal government with Labor premiers and state and territory ministers right around the country, an entire Labor lineup. That'll be quite remarkable, won't it?
Look, I think it's fascinating, and I think well done to Kevin Rudd to hit the ground running on this. I mean, the poor petals in the press gallery, they don't run the country. And I think Kevin Rudd has...
Oh, come on, a moment of sympathy for hardworking people.
Oh, come on. Look, they have to deal with the news as it emerges. So, look, I think it's terrific. I mean, it is a very, very big list of issues on his agenda.
Yeah.
And I mean, for mine, it was always going to be the biggest dividend, potentially, of wall-to-wall Labor, was having someone in Kevin Rudd, who was totally schooled in COAG. I mean, I remember when I was working for Jeff Kennett, I remember meeting him in hotels and at COAGs, and he was right across the detail. He was running all the policy out of Queensland, and he was a real mover and shaker on, you know, during that last great period of federal-state reform, which was after the Hilmer competition policy reforms of the Keating period in the early 90s. And the nation got good dividends from that. And since then, it's been 10 years of blame game, and there is a great chance for something to happen. And, I mean, for a Me Too leader who people say is going to be a sort of a do-nothing copy of John Howard, I mean, this list of issues which he wants to put on the table is quite breathtaking in its breadth of reform. And if the state can finally make a decent settlement of the Federation and the roles and responsibilities, there's a lot of upside for all of us. So I think good on him for hitting the ground running, and how on earth he's juggling Bali and ministerial codes and his wife selling off her, you know, vastly valuable business and rallying all the premiers into Melbourne on the 5 days before Christmas. It's pretty ambitious.
We've got another workaholic Prime Minister.
I think that is certainly the case, Virginia. So we'll see how it all pans out. But so far, I think it's pretty encouraging.
Just very briefly, the ANZ AGM next Tuesday, they're running off to Perth. They're, of course, guns bankers. So that's going to be a fascinating AGM.
Should be a corker. I think I'd be going to Perth as well if I was ANZ and I was about to lend guns a couple of billion to build a pulp mill. But they're already sort of buttering up the Wilderness Society, giving them an allocated 5 minute time for to speak at the AGM. And they're also facing an outside board tilt from a fellow called Robert Reeves, who was a senior executive at the bank and was also once the Deputy Secretary of the Victorian Treasury. So you don't get credible outsiders running for boards like this.
Don't.
You only get nutters like me. So it should be interesting to see how he goes and the Wilderness Society go in Perth.
Stephen Mayne, you and I have been having chats for 8 years, started in 2000, and it's always been an absolute pleasure. I think the information that you offer to the listener is second to none. So thanks so much for everything you've done over the years.
Well, I've enjoyed every minute, Virginia, and the best of luck on television and elsewhere in the future.
Good on you. We'll catch up soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Stephen Mayne, shareholder, activist, online columnist and founder of crikey.com.au. And yes, we started all the way back in 2000. I think it was on Valentine's Day 2000 that Stephen and I first started having conversations. But he is great company, isn't he? Do stay with me, won't you, after the news at 10 o'clock, because the NAC is coming up and also some dire warnings emerging from the Child Obesity Conference that's being held at the moment. News time now on 702 ABC Sydney, 10 o'clock.